Welcome to the Financial Power Hour with the financial prosperity coach, Christopher Music, who has been a featured guest on CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox affiliates, sharing his 20-plus years of experience in financial principles and how to apply them to your life and business. And now, your host, Christopher Music.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Christopher Music, your host, and I am welcoming you here to the Financial Power Hour here on AM 1380, The Biz. Now, you know, I have been doing this show now for quite some time, and the reason why I do this show is for small business owners and professionals who own their own private practices to achieve what I call financial power. Now, how in the world do we define this idea of financial power? What is it? It is a state of operation in your household at such a level of abundance that your household is free of all debt. Free of all debt. That you have set up your own pension plan that will not be affected by events outside your control, like market crashes. It's funny to me how much people lose wealth in what they've been able to save outside their business because of these economic events that are manufactured to relieve you of your wealth. And that's a sad thing, but it's how what's really going on today. So we want to protect that. We want to have a business that will sell someday for maximum value to somebody else. Most people build a practice just to have a place to work. They don't think of it as a financial planning asset in their household, their senior entity, that can provide a lifetime income stream if you plan it right. And that's part of this condition of financial power. Having all of your assets protected from loss as much as possible by using laws and structures and just common sense. And then having time free to pursue more important or as important life goals that you have and your purposes. That's what financial power is. It can be achieved. It can be objectively measured. And this is something new, because I've never heard this before, listed by anybody who is a financial advisor as a product, as a result that we can attain in a household. But alas, we can. And we can because we use natural laws. You know, people love natural laws because they can be actions that are done in alignment with knowledge that gets a predictable result. We love prediction. Now, I think I would argue perhaps people don't like prediction. People like to fly by the seat of their pants and throw up against a wall and see if it sticks and have the sensation of, aha, it worked. But I think that most of us, especially in the world of economics, there's enough unprediction, uncertainty, and downright mystery in this area of personal economics and finance, that it would be okay if we had a path to navigate that we knew with a high level of certainty would get us to a particular place, a particular destination, a condition of operation. Do you see what I'm saying? That is something that my industry, as a financial planner, I've been in this business for 25 years now, and I have observed that the best people in my business know how to invest money, you know, as far as like stock and bond markets. They know how to insure. You know, they know how to do these things, reduce taxes, set up your estate plan. But where does it come down to prediction? That is what planning is all about. And the biggest area of prediction that most business owners tend to believe that there is no technology or no know-how on how to predict a result is in their business. Now, guys, look, if you're a small business owner or an owner of a professional service business, like a professional practice, dental office, chiropractic office, accounting firm, law firm, you have that as your largest and by a lot your riskiest asset. How risky is your business compared to the stock market investments? Have you ever looked at that? Well, you can tell by how much money someone would give you for it as a multiple of earnings. So the S&P 500 is trading around 20 times earnings. That means an investor will invest $20 to get a dollar of earnings. That's what it means. But how much would someone invest to get a dollar of your earnings in your small business? Well, gee, that could be two to maybe five times earnings. So now you got $2 of investment to get a dollar of earnings to $5. Well, if you look at it from a risk point of view, the S&P 500 then is 4 to 10 times riskier, or your business is 4 to 10 times riskier than the S&P 500. So what in the world are we doing not maximizing the value of that business, minimizing risk, and finding a way to transition out of it as you age and maybe want to do something else? You see, that's where the problem comes in. Financial planners don't discuss that issue because they don't know how to do it. But you know, my guest today is a rock star in creating just this product. You know, so important to view your business as your number one financial planning asset from inception through growth, through distribution of the profits, and eventually its disposition as you're in your retirement, whatever that means to you. So that is what we're going to discuss today, because there are natural laws. This guy wrote a book on the natural laws of business management. And there is a tremendous amount of information and knowledge available to you that is very well tested, that is works for millions of companies around the world. And so we're going to talk to him as a business management expert. His name is Artie Marin. And he's going to be talking to you about the most important factors you should focus on to catapult your business forward. So we're going to take a quick break. And up next, we're going to be talking to him. He's an international speaker and business management expert. And he'll be giving you his insight and expertise on the secrets to using natural laws to move your business to the next level. You don't want to miss it. We'll be right back. If you're a business owner, ask yourself this question. Do you know how to avoid the common money mistakes slowing down operations and growth? Are you confident with great certainty that you're in control of all financial decisions? Are you running your business with the know-how to achieve financial prosperity? So what is financial prosperity, and how do you really know if you're there? Your first clue that you're not is spending more time dealing with financial worries than growing your business. I'm Christopher Music, and I have a solution for you. I have researched and codified 21 laws of financial prosperity for private practice owners from a study of 5,000 years of civilization. These laws have been found workable in all times and places, and they can be applied successfully today to help you achieve wealth and freedom. Go to 21prosperitylaws.com and download your free 21 Laws of Financial Prosperity Action Guide today. Do not wait. That's 21prosperitylaws.com.
Welcome back to the Financial Power Hour with Christopher Music, online at pchristophermusic.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Christopher Music, and you're listening to the Financial Power Hour here on AM 1380, The Biz. Now, before the break, I shared with you about the importance of building a business that has a predictable growth pattern and is in alignment with natural laws. And as promised, I'm going to introduce my next guest expert, Mr. Artie Marin. Now, Artie has been an international keynote speaker, corporate trainer, and private consultant on all facets of management for associations, corporations, small business owners, and professional private practices for over 25 years. He has made extensive presentations in sales, management, manufacturing, professional, and retail-related audiences. Traveling all over the world, Artie has appeared on radio and television in 8 countries, as well as throughout the USA, all over the world. It's amazing what this guy does. He's appeared on such shows as Larry King, Tom Snyder, Voice of America. He is a renowned expert in business management systems and my good friend. I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Artie Marin. Artie, thanks for being on the show.
Great. Thank you, Christopher, and it's fantastic to be with you.
Awesome, man. So it's great that we finally get to do this. You know, there are so many things we can touch on this short interview. I've known you for what, maybe 10, 12 years now. And you know, you have such a wealth of knowledge and assistance for people. So I guess let's just start right now. And what, in your opinion, are the most important factors in growing a practice or business?
Well, I think you started your audience off perfectly when you said that the business is the number one asset. This is extremely important to have the right level of importance for the business. And most people look at it as simply maybe the cash cow or the flow of cash. But the fact is it's an asset. So if every single listener suddenly was given a present, or they bought it, but present I like even better, given a present of this brand new red Maserati, and it's sitting out there, do you take care of it? Do you polish it? Do you keep it out of the rain? The point I'm making is, wow, you pay a lot of attention to that asset. And this is the same with the business. So let's start with that viewpoint, but then let's go to what are the important factors. I've isolated three in my experience, and I've been doing this many decades. I'm going to start first with purpose. And that is to say, not to make money, but money is what you get when you serve your purpose. Money is what you get when you do your purpose. But the question becomes, and this is important, I think, for everybody in your audience, your business, what purpose does it serve? That has to be isolated. What are you really trying to do? What purpose does this serve? That has to be laid out. It's probably one of the reasons why I wrote the book, which has an entire chapter on purpose and the ability to delineate what that purpose actually is. Because it's not just a glib statement thrown off the top. It's important. The second is everybody wants it to grow. The team, because after all, you're not doing this yourself. And by the team, we mean recruiting the right people, hiring properly, and of course, training them. And last, for our purpose right now, I would say certainly the metrics. Now that we have the right purpose, we have the viewpoint, we know what we're serving, we got the team, now we're going to measure how we're doing. You know, how did we do, how are we doing, and that will help predict how we're going to do in the future. Every employee, and that means every, has a metric, has a way of monitoring their production. If you have employees who are not held responsible, and by the way, responsible is a great word, ability to respond. The stat, the statistic, the graph is measuring their ability to respond to the environment. The environment has ups and downs, and it has whoops and wherefores, and how your employee responds to that, if that can be monetized or put on a graph, we've got something we can follow. Now, why? Because we want to see if they're doing poorly? No. The first reason is I want to know where it's working. You know, all too often, we put a lot of attention on areas that are not working and trying to fix it at the detriment of failing to reinforce what is working, and that comes first. So I'd have to say, in summary, Christopher, purpose, who's on the team and how are we handling that, and the metrics of monitoring how we're doing.
You know, that's so important that you bring that up, because I think a lot of our business owners have they want as a place to work, and they always complain like, you know, it's getting good people. Getting good people is always the biggest problem, you know, and all of these issues. And I think it comes down to an issue of leadership. Touch on that point in the business world.
If you look at your company as the vessel, as the ship, whether it's a small sailboat or an ocean liner in terms of the size of your company. The fact is that leadership is getting it from where it is to where it should be. You know, I was just back from Taiwan, and I did several sessions there and training some corporate executives. And I did a lot of study on the word leadership because they're really hot on leadership there in the East. And I looked at the word, and the genesis, the origin of the word is fascinating because leadership goes way back. It's over 1,000 years, and it has a lot to do with nomads. You know, the word leadership has a connects up to bringing somebody to a safe place, and that's what leadership is to me. It's future vision. You can't be a leader 1,000 years ago without having some concept of where you're taking your tribe. So this it entails future vision. The leader, which is why, by the way, the leader is positioned at the top of an organization board. They're up there. Well, why are they up there? To signify that they're different? Yeah, it's true. It does signify their status. But I like to look at it differently. I like to look at it as the executive director's up there because he sees out. See, everybody else down on the line, they only see each other. They only see what's below. But the executive director, the CEO, he or she sees out. So future vision. Additionally, leaders give the company, give the staff a game. There has to be some kind of, it has to be a game spirit of play. It can't be, quote, work, more work. I know from all the staff that I've had over the years, when I provide the game, everybody gets into the game. Well, what if they don't want to get into the game? It's their fault? No, guess what? I didn't give them a good enough game because there's no employee I've ever had in the many decades, we're talking about four or five decades, ladies and gentlemen, that I've been doing this, where I have come up with a good game, that one that really works, that got their attention, they play it for blood. So I know if I put out a game and I'm not getting a lot of interest, I'm not blaming it on them. No, I got the wrong game. Further, leadership has a lot to do with force. You know, it's not just being intelligent. There is a certain amount of force necessary, and force is necessary appropriately. In emergency, it's tremendous force. There's a fire. You're not going to take any lip. You're not gonna get this done now. Pour that water on. Fine, that's emergency. But what if it's not quite that emergency? What if it's less an emergency? What if it's far less emergency? I like to look at the amount of pressure, the amount of emergency, based upon the amount of emergency to that degree. So force needs to be used appropriately. And leadership depends upon also having the right team. You know, a great coach in basketball, football, whatever, part of their coaching ability is to ensure, whether it's through their influence on management or the owners, but one way or another, hey, if you're putting this guy on my team, I better have a say in it because I'm going to be gauged on the basis of their production to some degree. So if we don't have talent, we got a problem. So that means that, you know, you need to take a good look at, do we have the right person in that position? And that is more of that same recruitment training, but it's an important facet. And I guess the last point I would mention on this leadership is never wavering in your intent that this company is going somewhere, because the leader shows that courage. Whether the statistics are working, whether they're not, you do not waver in your intent to move forward, because after all, you are setting the example.
Yeah, of course. And that's the part that I think a lot of business owners don't really fully understand, is that they are in charge of that ship. Now, part of my private practice millionaire model, I have three roles: the practitioner, who delivers the valuable service to the public, the executive, who's the one who makes the team and runs it and gets the results of income and profit. And then the owner is the one responsible for the overall game and the overall growth and planning for that particular enterprise. So what is your view of the executive, and what kind of temperament do they need to have to be really successful in this area?
You touched on a really hot subject. I mean, the temperament of the executive, probably one of the most difficult things I've had in the training of CEOs that I've done over the past three or four decades. I shouldn't say three or four. To be honest, for the audience, I began consulting executives in 1971. So I don't know, you added up. Temperament, you know, the emotional response, you know, sometimes we refer to it as emotional IQ. You know, intelligence is one thing, but emotional intelligence is another. And the temperament, from what I've seen over the decades, the best temperament is those that are connected to the reality of the situation. Does that mean a good executive never gets angry? Ah, come on. No, that's not correct. Good executives get angry at appropriate times. You know, if your employee comes in and says, boss, hey, sorry about that accident in the plant. We just lost $50,000 last hour. I'm sorry, but I and the executives I train are not responding with, hey, you know, things happen. No.
Right.
But it fits the reality. What I've found, and I've surveyed literally hundreds and hundreds of employees, is where it doesn't fit, where there's a temperamental outburst, or there's whether it's anger or sadness or disappointment or upset or whatever it is, but it didn't seem to have any connection to the occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably, you know, as far as the temperament, I would say a good executive recognizes the situation and acts appropriately out of a control of temperament, out of a control of emotion, to utilize it for the greatest result, or the most positive result, I should say.
Yeah, and that's so important. You know, looking at this business conundrum, you know, one of the biggest problems in the world of financial planning is, I don't make enough income. You know, I just don't make enough income in my business. And of course, it's hard to do financial planning, which is traditionally expense and protection, which is what most of my peers do.
Right.
You know, you can't do a good job spending money you don't have. And it's
right.
Funny because I see these professionals and these small business owners say, well, I want to be successful financially. Financial planners trying to help them by budgeting and by, say, $300 a month in his mutual fund, and you know, somehow we're going to make it go. And they have to really be rock stars in their business, learn how to run a business, learn how to manage people, and make this this activity really hum and become something that will provide them maximum income and profit and be able to transition that to somebody else. So you know what we're going to do right now? We're going to take a little break. It's time for the weather and traffic update. And up next, we're going to continue to talk with author and business management expert, Mr. Artie Marin. And we're going to ask him more questions about taking your business to the next level. You will definitely not want to miss the rest of this interview. Stay tuned for weather and traffic up next.
Why do we go into business for ourselves? What's the payoff of hard work and self-sacrifice? Hopefully, you've answered by saying your dream was to be debt-free and financially wealthy. If not, then something is missing. It's been said that you can't manage what you can't measure, and that's certainly true in business and in your financial life. I'm Christopher Music, and I want to invite you to an online video called The 17 Statistical Measurements of the Private Practice Millionaire. Learn how to define financial power and how to correctly and objectively measure when it is achieved. Why using current mainstream metrics steps are incomplete, creating an apparency of financial success while actually creating financial duress. And how mastering the ability to measure financial success will help you stay in control so that you can achieve financial power. Visit financialpowerstatistics.com and watch the 17 statistical measurements of the Private Practice Millionaire video. That's financialpowerstatistics.com.
This is the Financial Power Hour with Prosperity Coach Christopher Music. Make contact at 727-588-1540. And now, here's Christopher Music.
Well, hey, folks, we're back, and you're listening to the Financial Power Hour here on AM 1380, The Biz. This is Christopher Music, the creator of The Private Practice Millionaire, and we're talking with rock star, international speaker, and business consultant, Artie Marin, on taking your business to the next level and increasing your bottom line. So, Artie, in this segment, we're going to be talking about the secret to driving sales. That's money.
Okay.
You business owners, and what's been your experience as to the primary marketing activity to grow a business?
Well, let me bring up the word primary, because while there are things that are more important than others, in my experience, unfortunately, you don't want to be totally dependent on any one marketing activity. 23 years ago, I had a client who was completely dependent upon mailings. The post office went on strike. Oh, well, you know, that taught a very quick lesson. So let's go back to the basics. There must be a outflow. There must be promotion happening all the time. And by the way, Christopher, I know that you have many, many, you know, hundreds of clients, professional practices that you've helped in terms of their growth. And one of the points that I run into with professionals is that their promotion, their marketing, is intermittent. And by that I mean they begin promotion. They do very well. They're not fully staffed, so they get, quote, too busy, or they get busy enough, and the promotion dwindles down because, after all, they're handling all the traffic they're getting. That's a mistake. Things have to be organized enough so that promotion continues. So I'd say the primary marketing activity would be continuous promotion. Let's start there. We know that it has to be more than one, as I just mentioned. And if you put me to it and you say, now, Conard, the question is primary marketing. What's the primary? I'm going to answer it word of mouth. There is no question that that is the most effective, the most economical, the most expensive way to build a professional practice or a business. The problem, and maybe something we can discuss later, is how do you generate word of mouth? I mean, word of mouth sort of happens. Yeah, it happens because of a good product or a service, but I'm going to tell you that when it comes to word of mouth, when it comes to referrals, most business owners, practice managers, practice owners are leaving a tremendous amount of business on the table. So I'm going to say outflow. I'm going to say three or four different channels. I'm going to say certainly we've been very, very successful lately. I mean, Facebook ads can pinpoint all sorts of customers and clients and patients.
Mm-hmm.
Can be done very, very effectively, and I'm sure you've had tons of guys on the show. So let's say we've got things in place. The other thing I found is it needs a campaign. I'll say to somebody, well, tell me about the marketing. Have you tried? Have you done postcards? Oh, I did that once. It didn't work. You did it once, and it didn't work. That's not it. Once does not a campaign make. Are you dedicated to this? It's sort of like saying, yeah, I'm going to get married, and hopefully it'll all work out okay. Well, I can tell you, buddy, you're in trouble. So unless there's a commitment, it's not going to happen. So it needs a campaign. Do I mean a laid-out, written campaign? Of course. just as I know you do with your clients, Christopher. It's all laid out, their whole exit strategy, everything from where they are to their exit strategy to their grandson, it's all laid out. Well, that's good administration. That's good management. So having said that, last point, there needs to be somebody to run it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the campaign. Now, who's running the campaign? Well, the doctor, the CPA. They're going to run into that problem of I'm too busy, and they're going to cut the line, and then it's going to dry up, and then they're going to take it up again, and then it's going to dry up. And I have a word for that. It's called stress. Every time they pick it up again. And No. It could be somebody just doing 2 hours a day. It could be somebody full-time. Whatever it is, the marketing is the electricity of the practice. It's the juice. Somebody's got to turn that crank so that electricity runs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And not many people know that more than you, Christopher, because you're an example of it.
Yeah, well, thanks, Artie. And of course, you know, I learned the hard way, as I'm sure most of my listeners have. And, you know, folks, if you could just take one takeaway, just one takeaway from this talk today, it is what Artie just said about being committed to marketing. Most business owners, most professionals especially, just grossly undermarket, underpromote themselves. And if you just take one thing away, write that down about the three different sources of outflow, referrals, having someone in charge of a campaign, planning it out. Artie has helped tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people just with that very point of getting alignment of that activity. Artie, that's so valuable in what you said there. Now, let's take a point that you said there about marketing, and let's pull it forward to the end product of marketing, which is now sales, like we alluded to earlier. So talk about that process that you employ.
Sure. You know, I've been known and accused of being Mr. Basics, Mr. Fundamentals. Let's go to the fundamentals of the sales process. I'm going to begin much lower than most people expect, and I cover this in my sales training to corporations and individuals. You can't sell what you don't own, meaning what is your level of affinity, your level of respect for the product you're selling. You know, Death of a Salesman, that incredible play, salesmen die because they're selling stuff that they don't believe in, or they don't believe in enough. So you can't sell what you don't own. Secondly, how well do you know the product? You know, product knowledge means really knowing it inside out. And why is that important? It's important because when you're assaying, when you're interviewing the prospect, that's a process of linking their assumptive needs to the products you have. And if you don't know those products, you could be offering the wrong thing, and that's when you get into force. You know, selling is very easy. Mm-hmm. Selling is a very comfortable activity if you know the rules. But it's very uncomfortable for the seller and the sellee when it's rigid, when it's force, when it's because you're just not on the right track. So how do you know you're on the right track? Prior survey. In most of the cases in my business, let's just say when I do talks for associations or talks for a corporation, even before I'm hired, if there's interest, I want to know all about that corporation. I want to know all about that company. Why? So I can close them? No. I want to know because will I be able to deliver what is valuable to that company? That's how I make my money. The more valuable I can be, the more easily the sale is closed, and the more income one makes. So what prior data do you have? Somebody calls in and says, hey, I want to buy your product or service, assuming it's more than $1.80, because then it's just all internet and that's fine. But let's say it's fairly high ticket. Well, before you're calling that person, certainly you're looking them up on LinkedIn and Google and so on. Who is this person? What do I know about them? Where are they at? So that's another important point. It's knowing something about what you're walking into, so you have a better idea. And then once you're in there, once you're in the process, and boy, I could spend a half an hour on this in my seminars, and I usually do. Let them talk.
Mm-hmm.
The sales process is a process of interest on the part of the salesperson. This is not your time to be entertaining the customer, making them laugh. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But the way a sale is made, to get to the basics of it, is all about discovery. And here's a million-dollar point. The discovery is not just that you found something they need that you supply. I'm going to bring this up again, because this is truly a million-dollar tidbit. It is not a matter of discovering something that they need that you can supply. Good sales discovery is discovering, is for them discovering something that they didn't know they needed. They didn't know that. See? And through your inspection and through your investigation, when you say, yeah, but what about this? And they say, well, actually, we don't do that. Oh, you don't do that. Okay, well, and then how do you do this? Well, that's always been a problem. Hmm. So you're saying that I need it. Yeah, I'm saying you need that for sure. And that's it. It's closed.
You get that, folks? I didn't mean to interrupt, Artie. This is so powerful. Y'all get that, what he's saying there? Is the getting the person to realize they needed something they didn't know they needed. Makes us feel good too, doesn't it, Artie?
Oh, of course. Of course.
Tremendous. Tremendous. Well, I'll tell you what, at this point, we're going to take a little break, Artie, and we're going to be coming back. We're going to wrapping up our interview with my very special rock star guest, Mr. Artie Marin, and we're going to ask him some more secrets on how to take your business to the next level, so stay tuned.
If you're a business owner, ask yourself this question. Do you know how to avoid the common money mistakes slowing down operations and growth? Are you confident with great certainty that you're in control of all financial decisions? Are you running your business with the know-how to achieve financial prosperity? So what is financial prosperity, and how do you really know if you're there? Your first clue that you're not is spending more time dealing with financial worries than growing your business. I'm Christopher Music, and I have a solution for you. I have researched and codified 21 laws of financial prosperity for private practice owners from a study of 5,000 years of civilization. These laws have been found workable in all times and places, and they can be applied successfully today to help you achieve wealth and freedom. Go to 21prosperitylaws.com and download your free 21 Laws of Financial Prosperity Action Guide today. Do not wait. That's 21prosperitylaws.com.
Welcome back to the Financial Power Hour with Christopher Music, online at pchristophermusic.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Christopher Music, and you are listening to the Financial Power Hour here on AM 1380 The Biz. I have my expert friend, Artie Marin, in the house, and we are talking about business management and strategies to increase your bottom line as a business owner. So we talked about sales and the importance of sales. Now we get into sales people. Artie, how in the world do you manage sales people? What works best with those folks?
I love that you refer to it as those folks, because it is actually a separate species. Look, salespeople are courageous. In many, many cases, they're working on commission. This is something special. This is, you know, if I don't produce, I don't get paid. I mean, okay, if there's a base, whatever, it doesn't matter. The bases are usually too small. So this is a special species. I remember once offering, I had a partner, and we were going over various activities, and I offered him an opportunity far more than what he was making if he would be willing to do it on the basis of speculation of what is produced. And he looked at me as if I had asked him to commit some horrendous act. Yet I have always operated on that basis. So I know a fair amount about it. Number one, you're dealing with a special kind of cat, and that means two things: games and metrics, challenges and awards, and monitoring those that production. So there has to be incentives, but I want to bring up that the incentive has to be based upon a challenge and not simply providing some kind of bonus when they've done something normal, because that gets it begins creeping. And after a while, you're giving your salespeople a bonus when they do their job. So it has to be above and beyond. Now, this is a bit of a technique, but it's not that difficult when you're looking at incentives. If you've got a graph, and you better have one, and we're tracking, let's just take sales volume. All right, so sales volume has been running at 60,000 for whatever it is, weekly, monthly, yearly, but it's running about 60,000. It runs 1 month, you know, 1 week is 60, another week is 80, another week is 45. This is the general trend. Okay, well, I'm looking at bonuses starting at 83, 84, 85. But the big problem with this area of managing salespeople is that most people do not understand that there are three segments to making this work. Segment number one, you have to set a real target. Real meaning it's not out of reach. The guy's been averaging 50, and you're going to put him in 120, forget it. The game's over before you start.
Yeah, right.
But what's real, okay? Real may be just $5,000 more or $10,000 more because, you know, there have been surveys done programs done with IBM where they found out that smaller targets worked better. Let them meet the target, give them a win, and then set another target and keep running these small targets. I'm a fan of that. So set a real target. But the game is not over at that point. I've seen these meetings where I've sat in, and they say, a sales meeting, okay, so our target is 63 this week. Everybody, yay, yay, and they all leave. Wait a minute. How are they going to get there? Question number two is, how are you going to get there? Question one is, where are you going? Question number two, how are you going to get there? And question number three, what happens when we arrive? That's the reward. That's the incentive. So we could spend the entire show on this, Christopher, but that's what I would look at is, it's got to be a game. It's got to be metrics following it. There's got to be a reward, and it's all got to be real.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I see a lot of very successful practice owners that I work with really put that in there, and it does create tremendous results, which leads us to our next question, which is about referrals. How do you get referrals?
Well, again, as I stated earlier, I'm a big fan of it. I have a referral program. It's probably one of the early things I do with my clients. And in fact, I might say that, and maybe you'll mention at the end, but if somebody would like a little more information about that, I'll be happy to give them a little free download on referrals. But it is the most effective, economical way. And I just gave a seminar on this the other day to a marketing company, and I said referrals are the most ethical way of building business. And then I put it to the audience. Why is it ethical? And actually, a few people got it right away. Because you can't get a referral unless you've delivered a positive service to the referrer. Mm-hmm. So it falls into that ethical band. The biggest mistake I've seen, and again, this is in my download, the biggest mistake I've seen is that the referring party does not get acknowledged sufficiently. And that word sufficiently is loaded, okay?
Mm-hmm.
By sufficiently, I mean how quickly. Somebody just sent you business worth $400, $4,000, who knows? How quickly do they get that thank you, that maybe personal touch, that phone call. It has to be fast because time says something about importance. Oh, by the way, that referral you sent me 3 months ago, they paid me $3,000? Thanks. It's something's wrong with that. So the acknowledgement has to be quick. It has to be appropriate. They sent you somebody and this person spent $1.80. That's a nice little note. They spent $1,800. I think we may be entering into territory. Now, I realize many professions have a barrier against what you can say or do, but every one of them can be gotten around in a very legitimate way because the bigger truth, and again, this is in my download, anybody who has ever sent you any business will do it again. If they think you think it's important, and they have been sufficiently thanked for having done so. So, you know, needless to say, I'm a huge fan about referrals.
I think anybody who's in business would have to agree with you because, again, the word of mouth and it is definitely the lowest cost of acquisition,
right?
Exactly. For new clients and or customers and. Yeah, and so it's so important, Artie, to bring all of these together. I know you wrote a book called The Natural Laws of Management. And everyone listening, I really urge you to pick up a copy. Amazon.com, I think you can find it, The Natural Laws of Management by Artie Marin. And Artie, why don't you give us just one quick tip from that published book to round out our interview today?
Sure. Yeah, and by the way, the book can be gotten directly from me at Art Marin. ArteMaren at me.com, because it's not on Amazon for a half a dozen reasons, which I go into now. But if you do go there, the book is listed for about $280.
Oh.
I don't think you're
going to live for less than that.
Right. But to give you a tip, I mean, the book has in it important factors about setting policy, about statistics, about goals. But the biggest response I get is Chapter 19. Chapter 19 is all about the dimmer switch. And the dimmer switch is part of the no-option theory. And to put it very succinctly, no excuses. The biggest response I get from executives, from those running private practices, is the fact that the way I've laid it out, it has eliminated the need or the impulse to make an excuse. And that only leaves getting the job done. So I would say the biggest tip there is try operating without a net, meaning the net is, if you envision this, the net is a bunch of excuses and it's gone.
Mm. Yeah, tremendous. Tremendous. All right, so how do people get a hold of you, Artie?
ArtMaren at me.com. ArteMaren at me.com. I can get a subscription to my blog, et cetera, and all that good stuff. I've got a section now on management by stats in there and a whole bunch of other things, but I'll be in communication with them and let's see what they need.
All right, y'all, take advantage of this and pick up a copy of his book, The Natural Laws of Management. Mr. Artie Marin, you contact him. I'm sure he'll give you a download of the referral program he was talking about. This is 40 years, 50 years of information all coalesced into a couple of very, very poignant pieces. Artie, thanks so much for being on the show. You truly are a rock star.
Great.
And just loved having you here, man.
Well, thanks for having me, Christopher. I love your show.
Thank you. Thank you. So, y'all, grab a pen and paper. Figure out what you can take from today's show to implement right away in your business. It is so vitally important that you take action. Do something to really boom your business. Create that financial planning asset that will set up your financial independence. You know, the financial position you find yourself in today is your indicator on how well you understand and apply these basic laws. I invite you to go to my website at pchristophermusic.com. pchristophermusic.com and download the 21 Laws of Prosperity that I have created there just for you. I also want you to go to my podcast channel at financialpowerhour.com and listen to archived copies of this show. And connect with me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, check out YouTube, all those places. But it's my hope that you use this wisdom to achieve what is most important to you.
and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Financial Power Hour. For more information on prosperity principles and how to apply them to your life and your business, visit Christopher's personal website at pchristophermusic.com or connect with him on Facebook at facebook.com/pchristophermusicauthor. You may also call Christopher's office at 727-588-1540 to request more information or arrange for him to be a guest speaker at your next event. That's 727-588-1540 or visit pchristophermusic.com.